Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. You are watching The Future is Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. I'm delighted to introduce my guest today, Dr. Indra Selvaraja. She wears many hats, including the founding president of the Malaysian Music Therapy Association. She's the vice president of the Malaysian Society for Music and Medicine. She's a lecturer, clinician and researcher at University Putra Malaysia and chair of the Global Crisis Intervention Commission for the World Federation of Music Therapy. In short, she is a medical music therapist and I'm delighted to welcome her to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
What an interesting field. Can you maybe begin by sharing with us a little bit about, for many of us who don't know what music therapy is, can you explain it and how it works?
Sure. Music therapy is the scientific and evidence-based use of music to intervene, support, rehabilitate human functioning. And what that means basically is that as music therapists, we are trained to harness the creative potential in music in all its possibilities, to find ways to use music as an entry point, to help to enhance health and well-being, to support rehabilitation, and also to act as a preventative health catalyst.
Preventative, okay, that's interesting as well. So rehabilitation, there's two components to it. Okay, you are, as I understand it, the first PhD qualified music therapist here in Malaysia. I hope that's accurate.
Well, that was a privilege that I would really like to thank JPA
and
UPM.
How did you get into music therapy? Was it a common field of study when you first went into it?
Actually, when I went into it into Malaysia, it really was something quite unknown. Okay. But what happened was when I was training initially in the UK, because my undergraduate and first master's degrees were from the UK. Mm-hmm. And I was really fortunate because in that music program, they had that opportunity to take a music therapy course. And I thought, wow, that sounds wonderful. And I had to take a minor while I was studying my music program in UK. So I did psychology because I'm a person who likes to ask why and I want to understand what's behind the scenes, you know, how things work. So when I heard about music therapy, I thought, okay, I'm going to take this course because I love the idea of using music to help the community.
Okay.
And I was just smitten. But I thought at that time, I don't really see prospects coming back to Malaysia and going into music therapy. But what I did was then for my master's, I went into music psychology and music performance. Because I always felt like, you know, there are a lot of people in Malaysia who are musical. Mm. But we don't always know how to optimize their music learning potential. So I wanted to understand from the psychological perspective what I could do as a music teacher to help my students so that everyone could benefit from music.
And who benefits from it? So specifically for music therapy, who are the types of patients that can benefit from music therapy?
Well, the beauty of music therapy is because everyone has a potential to engage in music in ways that are personally meaningful. Mm-hmm. That really means that as long as a person has no active resistance towards music or suffers from some kind of physiological condition that prevents them from being able to respond to music, everyone else could potentially benefit from music.
Are there people who respond negatively to music?
Very rare cases.
Is it a sensory thing?
It could be something that has to do with there is a condition they call musicogenic epilepsy. And what happens is, for very, very rare and few people, they have aversion to the sound waves and the sensations. But apart from that, even for people who have hearing impairment, they're still able to benefit from music therapy. Okay. And we work a lot with special needs populations across the spectrum. So we have autism, dyslexia. In fact, in UPM, we have done work with both NASOM, the National Autism Association, to support their children with autism as well as families. We've also worked with the National Dyslexia Association. As far as possible, I try to work with the professional associations that are doing community work to see how we can introduce music therapy, not just as a standalone, but as a complement to their treatment, because many of them are short-handed and they need support from the community.
So that's the special needs community. There's all that mostly children dyslexia and autism. There's also seniors who can
absolutely. Okay. And as part of the training that I received in the States, when we talk about special needs, mm-hmm. we talk about children as well as all the way to older adults.
I see.
And sometimes you have people who are born with congenital disabilities, but others who have acquired disabilities. In fact, one of the areas of work that we have done a lot through UPM is we've worked with Cheras Rehab Hospital. Oh. To deal with accident patients, stroke patients who have some kind of neurological impairment or traumatic brain injury.
And music therapy can help them with rehabilitation.
Absolutely. So one of the requests we received was to bring in music therapy so that we could motivate the patients in their rehabilitation process. And, you know, my heart really goes out to them because you can imagine if someone has suffered a stroke and they are already experiencing all the side effects of stroke and they are going to be taking medication, they have to often go for surgery, all those corrective measures will really weigh a lot on the patient, and there's a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, and sometimes the side effects of medication mean they are also semi-sedated or they're not able to fully respond. And unfortunately, the rehabilitation process is very intensive. And in order for them to get better, to regain as much of their functioning, they need to do intensive therapy. And it's the kind of effort that they put in which can involve 2 to 3 hours a day of just physiotherapy. And you know,
and
for
put
people,
your body through that, right?
And that's just physiotherapy. They also do occupational therapy, speech therapy. They have to do a whole combination of different therapies to achieve the right kind of intensity that helps to spur recovery.
So I'm trying to picture it. Can you help me imagine what music therapy looks like? So, and whether the approach changes when you're dealing with children, with you know, with seniors, or with accident victims. How do you change your approach? What does it look like for many of us who are trying to picture what music therapy is like?
That's an excellent question. So we are very much client-centered. And what that means is if you're working with children, we take into account their developmental needs. So depending on the age range, depending on what are the typical expectations in terms of their developmental milestone, we do individual assessment. And we try to find out what is their potential to engage with music, as well as what are their functional needs that music can help to address. It's the same when we're working with senior citizens, whether we're working with people who have suffered from specific illness and conditions. So part of the training means going a lot into the illness pathology. I had to do anatomy.
Wow.
I had to do a lot of medical courses, psychological courses, because we are trying to understand the human condition.
Right.
And all the permutations of...
Right. So the physiology of a disease and, you know, perhaps, say, for instance, someone living with dementia and the decline that they go through.
And the trajectory of the disease.
You have to understand how music therapy might be able to play a part in bettering the quality of life of that person?
So everything is pegged on goals, and the goals are derived from what we call evidence-based research, which means for each of these populations, there's already a body of research that has been done that is intensive, rigorous, to make sure that we understand the pathology, the etiology of the illness, the condition.
Is there a lot of research, a lot of literature around how music therapy affects different groups?
There is a growing body of research, mostly coming from the US, UK, Australia. We are trying to develop our evidence base here because we want to also understand, in terms of our local context, the cultural translation.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Is there a cultural translation when it comes to music therapy?
Absolutely.
What kind of music do you use in music therapy?
So when we deal with patients, one of the things that we seek to do is to find out their music preference, because it's all about trying to identify what is that individual client's personal relationship with music.
Okay.
What types of music are going to be most meaningful for them and most motivating to engage them in that therapeutic process.
Okay.
So when I go to Cheras Rehab and I work with the patients, I use a lot of P. Ramlee, a lot of local folk songs, because most of the patients there are coming from either a Malay cultural background, they can be, you know, some lovely pakcik makcik who are from Kelantan, Terengganu, you know, other parts of Malaysia. And so I have to understand their culture. I have to understand what music means for them and then use that as the entry point to do therapy.
Dr. Indra, is there a music, songs or music that cuts across all generations, all cultural backgrounds, all demographics. I ask this because, you know, there was one time I remember being on one of these kind of press junkets where we had journalists from different countries, and each country had songs that united them, right, regardless. Right. And I was thinking, well, what about Malaysia? Are there songs, is there music that unites us as a country across all kind of different demographic categories? What have you found?
Well, you know, that is one of the fun things about working with different groups in the local community. And I like to challenge myself to try to discover those songs. So I found so far P. Ramlee,
okay,
literally cuts across races, generations, socioeconomic background.
Wow.
I also found Sudirman. Is also very, very approachable. And people from all races respond to his music.
Mm.
And when you talk about the different ethnic groups in Malaysia, obviously there are going to be some cultural preferences as well. And
mm-hmm.
in fact, one of the things that we're doing in UPM right now is we're taking all these Western music therapy models that most of us have been trained according to the Western traditions, but we're trying to do that cultural translation into our local context. And that means doing the research to validate and to find how do our local community respond to music in ways that we can make it even more effective.
Yeah, because I was thinking maybe, you know, people from a certain... I'm thinking, you know, if I had to do music therapy, I might not respond as well to classical music as perhaps, you know, other forms of music. The cultural context is so important.
It is.
Fascinating. Okay, we're going to take a very quick break here on The Future is Female. We will be right back. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to The Future is Female. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm chatting today to medical music therapist Dr. Indra Selvaraj. We're talking about how music therapy can benefit so many different groups. You know, and you talked a little bit about rehabilitation, but also the preventative nature of music therapy. Coming back to Malaysia and setting up music therapy, essentially. I know there was music therapy in Malaysia previously, but in expanding this field here, what are some of the challenges that you found in growing and developing the field of study of music therapy?
One of the things that is an ongoing challenge is many people undervalue music.
Undervalue music.
And it's not because people intend to undervalue music, it's just that very often our perception of music is more of something that is for entertainment.
Mm.
And that is probably one of the most prominent roles.
Mm.
But if you look into the research and you look into cultural anthropology, you'll find that music actually serves 10 essential functions in society. And so entertainment is just one of them.
10 essential? I'm trying to think. What are they?
Well, it includes things like, you know, music is used for social and cultural integration.
Okay.
Music is used also to encourage the development of values, conformity of groups, where if you think about religion, if you think about how people often come together for nationalistic observations.
Patriotic, yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is an element of bringing people
together
to unite around a common purpose.
Mm.
We also talk about music and how it serves as a motivational force for physical movement. So I use that a lot in rehab. But music also helps to strengthen your cultural identity.
Right.
And music actually also helps to provide an outlet for emotional expression.
Mm.
And, you know, to the extent that we also find that music is a great way to communicate messages. And sometimes what is difficult to say is easier to say through music. And so just as an example,
sure.
So UPM works with the Malaysian Parkinson's Disease Association.
Okay.
And one of the research projects we did, besides the voice rehabilitation work, was we discovered as we were working with them and building rapport with the patients that many of them, unbeknownst to most people, actually suffer from a secondary mental health condition. Because the stress and the experience of having Parkinson's, which is a neurodegenerative disease and has no cure, really takes its toll. And unlike dementia, with Parkinson's, the patients remain lucid throughout that deterioration. So they know exactly what is happening in terms of how they start to lose functioning, things are shutting down, and they are helpless to do anything about it. Mm. So there is a lot of mental anguish. Many of them, as many as 50%, if you look at the research, go on to develop depression and anxiety disorders. So what we wanted to do was to figure out how can we use music as a source of coping and to find out what helps them to cope better. And the result of that, which was really powerful as part of that experience, was we did an undergraduate research project, actually, where we looked at using music therapy techniques to help them to slowly peel back the layers, express themselves in a safe space using music as that catalyst.
Okay.
But we were having therapeutic conversations about it. We were using things like song lyric analysis, and ultimately it culminated in songwriting. And what happened with that, and this is one of the most meaningful experiences for me, is that we actually wrote a song for them using words that came from all the patients. And we asked them, what do you want to say to the community? And they said, we want to send a message out to the community, asking the community to support us, because they need the community to work together with them to fight Parkinson's. And you know what was so beautiful is these are older adults mostly who are struggling from a debilitating condition, but they are so magnanimous in spirit.
And still can create and contribute and still has so much to give. And I think we often forget that.
Absolutely.
When we're dealing with not only just older adults, but people who are struggling with a degenerative disease, we will often think of them in decline, but actually they have so much more to give.
And you know, the one thing that we often do when we are working with these Parkinson's patients, we don't call them people with Parkinson's,
okay.
We prefer to call them Parkinson's warriors.
Wow.
Because what we see is courage,
right.
And how they are fighting a daily battle just to be able to manage the disease. Because if you know anything about, you know, how Parkinson's manifests, so there are the motor impairments,
right.
Which means that their walking, their ability to sit still and sit straight, all those things are compromised. You know, sometimes we may have heard of how people who are walking suddenly will find that they are shuffling on the step.
Okay.
And they just suddenly can't move forward. That is one of the symptoms of Parkinson's. And it's very embarrassing. It can contribute towards a higher risk of falls. Mm. And when we did our music intervention for Parkinson's and we set up the choir, we had to be very mindful of how long they could sit in the chair. We wanted to treat them like proper choir singers. We wanted to give them that dignity and to forget that, you know, for that amount of time that we did music, we were all musicians together. So they weren't focusing on the disease, and we were definitely trying to highlight their ability.
What a wonderful way to have a group activity, because music is not just solo. It's not just a solo, solitary journey. It can also be quite communal, and then you
very
have that
so.
Activity particularly takes you out of, you know, just kind of in thinking about your disease and your inner life. How do you see this, how do you see music therapy affecting, how can caregivers and people who live, the family members of those who may need music therapy, how can they contribute? Do they have a role to play?
Absolutely, that's a really, really important question. Very often that when I'm doing music therapy, if there are family members present, I try to involve them.
Okay.
And that means even in the hospitals.
Right.
Because you know that the amount of time that you get to spend with the patient in this facility is only limited. But the caregivers are the ones who are going to be journeying and going through whatever caregiving needs that the patient needs. And it also means that, because we know, I actually was a family caregiver myself, because my father had a whole variety of health conditions, and when I first did my degree in the UK and then I came back, it was partly to help my mum to look after my dad, who I knew was actively dying, and my grandmother as well, who had had a stroke. So I've had that experience, and I know what that's like and how much of a struggle it can be for caregivers. So when I'm in the hospital and I see any caregivers, family members there, you know, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a child, I'll try to bring them together into the activity.
How do they participate? And can they continue on the therapy even after the session is over?
Well, one of the funny stories which we never expected, and I really have to thank Shiraz Rehab Hospital for their graciousness, was we actually had situations where the patients were discharged from the hospital, but then we found that they came back to the hospital because they wanted to be involved in the music therapy sessions. And that was...
they wanted to continue on.
Yeah, and, you know, and the hospital was so wonderful. They said, sure, you know, bring them in.
Oh, lovely.
And so that was very, very heartwarming for us because it meant that, you know, perhaps they had gained something from it that they felt was important. And, you know, so much of what we do in music therapy is also about dignifying and preserving the personhood and the sense of self of the individuals who we work with. So it doesn't matter how disabled they are, how much they have been compromised by a disease, we try to see the person underneath and we try to find ways to empower that person.
How do you tell if there has been positive progress?
Well, the school of thought that I was trained in is more cognitive behavioral.
Okay.
So we look at a lot of behavioral indications.
Okay.
Whether it's the facial expression, the motivation to engage. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the measures that we use is their levels of engagement to see how much they're willing to participate. And so there are all kinds of scientific measures that you can use to track those changes. And everything that we do in music therapy is also goal-driven and also has objectives. So it means that from one session to the next, we will be trying to identify what is the optimum goal, the most critical need of that patient based on the diagnosis, based on the assessment that we conduct with them, based on their ability to engage with music. And then subsequently, we'll be following through and tracking the changes throughout the sessions.
So, as I understand it, there are so few medical music therapists in the country already. How do you work with allied healthcare professionals to make sure that music therapy is an option for those who need it?
So I've been very fortunate because word of mouth has helped to at least alert some of the government hospitals that I, you know, was fortunate enough to work with. At the same time, I also find that it's so important for music therapists to work alongside the other allied health therapists.
How do they work alongside?
So it is possible, for example, to combine physiotherapy with music therapy or speech therapy and music therapy.
Okay.
And what we do is I spend a lot of time talking to those therapists to find out what are their goals. And then what can I do as a music therapist to introduce music into the therapy session to actually optimize and improve achievement of their goals. Oh. So by combining the forces and the strengths of two different therapies, you can actually enhance the outcomes.
So for those watching today who might be interested in music therapy or might be interested in getting a diagnosis for music therapy, what are their avenues? Where should they go? Methods of research, what would you recommend to them?
Well, they can always reach out to me in UPM. I'm in the UPM Department of Music. And one of the things that is unique about our department is we have a whole range of specialties in our department, including people who are voice and opera experts. So you can imagine doing the voice rehabilitation work.
Yeah,
I work with a voice expert. And so we combine the strengths of what we do to provide benefits to the patient. So part of that voice rehabilitation work in the Parkinson's Association was actually developed together with my dear colleague, Dr. Ang Mei Fong, who, if you look her up, you will find there's a lot of information about her because she's a very, very prominent opera star in Malaysia. And so we also have ethnomusicologists. So when I mentioned just now the cultural translation, so working alongside someone who is a cultural expert, and she does a lot of excellent orang asli work, I can actually look into the nuances of culture from an ethnomusicology perspective and then combine that with music therapy. So that element of always trying to find the best expertise that we are able to bring on board so that we work alongside and spill over the benefits to the community.
My mind is blown from all the different elements and the ecosystem that goes around it. I never considered all these...
Well,
this
is from the university perspective, but also it wouldn't be right for me not to give a shout out to my other colleagues who are also music therapists who are working in the field and serving so diligently and with excellence. There is the Malaysian Music Therapy Association, and so we have most of the Malaysian music therapists are part of the association. So that's another avenue, and most of them are attached to private practice.
Okay.
But there's also one colleague who is working in Help University, and he specializes more on the psychology side of things. But we also have the Malaysian Society for Music and Medicine, and the reason why we have both those different associations side by side is because sometimes there are certain things in music therapy where, according to strict professional standards, have to go through a path which may or may not so readily mingle with other forms of therapeutic treatment.
I see.
But in the Malaysian Society for Music and Medicine, we have music therapy, medical music therapy, music and medicine sitting all alongside. That's
amazing.
One of the reasons why I'm part of some of these associations, because I need to have all these different platforms.
Right, because you can't work in a silo. There are overlaps and there are ways to collaborate. Just in the couple of minutes that we have left, Dr. Indra, what would you like to see, as someone working in this field, what would you like to see grow, change, evolve in this field?
I honestly feel that we need a national arts cultural policy.
Okay.
Something that helps musicians. I'm not just speaking for music therapists, but I have a lot of friends in the music industry who are actually working alongside. I mentioned some examples just now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is trying to do their part. Music educators, lots of music teachers who come and look for some kind of special needs training because they are trying
to use
their music skills to help the community. But because at present, we tend to have music locked in certain narrow parameters in terms of our cultural policy, it's very, very hard for them to navigate around that. And so many things that are being done on the ground are not efficiently channeled.
Mm.
And I think the support also needs to be given in ways that helps these practitioners gain more opportunities to actually widen and spread the benefits.
Because the interest is there.
The interest is there, the demand is high. That's one of the reasons why UPM is looking at trying to connect all these different groups and why we're doing so much to try to develop the kind of platform where we can bring people together, we can integrate, and we are trying our best to see how we can move everything forward. In fact, what happened last year, we had a symposium and we were fortunate to have the American Music Therapy Association president, Associate Professor Dr. Laurie Gooding, down in Malaysia on a Fulbright Award to work with UPM. And so we are developing this program together. But what we did is we are working regionally. There is a Southeast Asian Masters Group where we have music therapy educators, music therapists from six different countries in Asia. And we are collaborating to form a network of support. Because, you know, if you think about it logically, in Malaysia, we have certain connections to Indian culture, Chinese culture, Malay, Nusantara region.
Yes, yes.
And all these cultural practices of music, which in Malaysia, I would rather form networks of support so we can bring that benefit into Malaysia. And we try to pull together our strengths. And I'm also doing things for India, for Indonesia.
Amazing.
But we are doing this so that ultimately what we care about is trying to bring about the optimal benefits for the community, because that's what it's all about.
Well, I want to thank you for your good work and thank you for being on the show today. I learned so much from this half an hour conversation. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have on this episode of The Futures Female. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.